And now, it's time for our weekly news round, Lutheran Radio News with Paul Hill.
The University of Brighton has advised staff to not say Christmas and instead call it the winter closure period. The word Christmas is too Christian-centric, according to a 9-page inclusive language guidance document sent to lecturers at the university. Staff are also advised not to ask students, "What is your Christian name?" but instead say, "What is your first name?" or "What is your given name?" Generalizations about a group of people based on their age, such as saying millennial snowflakes or old people cannot use technology, should also be avoided, according to the guidance. Staff should be empowered to use inclusive language confidently and effectively in order to ensure that both students and staff alike feel safe, valued and respected, the document says. The document reads, "Language and meaning are powerfully conditioned by the dominant norms of the culture in which they exist. Prevailing attitudes, misconceptions and stereotypes are embedded within modes of communication, and these factors are sometimes reflected, whether consciously or not, in the language that we use when communicating with and referring to others. This means that communication, both oral and written, may be offensive even when this is not our intention." Andrew Allison of the Freedom Association said, "Universities are supposed to be places where ideas are freely debated. This is Orwellian and ridiculous. Staff and students ought to ignore it and have a good Christmas." Then, in a table advising staff on what not to say to students, they are urged to avoid the term Christmas closure period and replace it with winter closure period. The purpose of this is to avoid using Christian-centric language. A spokesman for the University of Brighton told Mail Online, "This guidance was produced with our staff and students and is part of our shared commitment to making Brighton a place where everyone feels respected and valued. The guidance is exactly that, guidance." They added, "Words are not banned at Brighton, and neither is Christmas, as is clear from the decorations and Christmas trees in our buildings and across our campuses." Renaissance paintings of Adam and Eve were behind original sexism in Western culture, a new study has claimed. Centuries-old masterpieces commit misogynistic stereotyping, according to researchers with the University of Edinburgh, as they consistently show Eve as a sinister figure. This is achieved in hundreds of paintings which place the first fallen women on Adam's left, in a position which was a coded symbol for being morally inferior, and this original sexism has been handed down through Western artistic culture. Professor Sergio Della Sala, a specialist in neuropsychology and one of the study's co-authors, said, "We suggest that she is a victim of an unholy trinity of associations. She is a woman, thus responsible for her original sin, thus consigned to the sinister side. This dark triad of original sexism historically permeates the visual art of Western Christian cultures. The right-hand side has long had positive associations with Aristotle's ancient work, The Metaphysics, linking it to goodness and light, and theatres often introducing their villains from stage left. The term sinister derives from the Latin for left. Eve is responsible in Genesis for the fall of man, from a state of innocence and bliss in the Garden of Eden to being cast out into sin and suffering." The Edinburgh study found that artworks from the 15th century to the modern day by artists from Rembrandt to Salvador Dali show Eve in this position of left-sided inferiority, and academics have argued that this subtle sexism continues to be communicated to contemporary art lovers. The study, published in the journal Laterality, states that this reflects the perceived lesser status of women in relation to men, and that the unquestioning acceptance of this tradition is abhorrent and pervasive. It adds, "Every time we visit a museum, every time we enter a church, every time we peruse an art textbook, it may be implicitly reinforced." Eve appears in these works on the right-hand side of the canvas from the viewer's perspective, but in the scene being depicted, she is to Adam's left. The study of hundreds of depictions of the Garden of Eden, spanning works by William Blake, Peter Paul Rubens, and Albrecht Dürer, found that 82% of a sample group of artworks prior to 1600 used this coded moral format. The proportion of studied paintings showing Eve in the sinister position declined over time, but 61% of Edenic imagery from the 20th century to date nevertheless kept up with the Renaissance tradition and showed her on the left hand of the scene. The study by Professor Della Sala and Professor Robert D. McIntosh had also noticed that this moral link between right and left may be linked to the human brain, as people tend to prefer objects placed in the left side of their visual field, meaning Adam is often in the position which is naturally preferred. While the study authors have said that the sexist tradition of putting Adam in this position has been continued, modern gallery goers are not aware of the historical coded messaging behind it. The king is expected to recognize that he serves all religious faiths and not just the Church of England when he speaks during his coronation. The coronation oath, in which he will pledge to be defender of the faith, will not change. However, palisades and church officials are planning to add a form of words that will allow the king to recognise his commitment to the multiple faiths of a diverse Britain. While the specific details remain under discussion, it is thought that the additional wording would be included either before or after the oath. The King has long worked to promote interfaith dialogue. In September, just days after he became monarch, he vowed to protect the space for faith itself, promising religious leaders during a Buckingham Palace reception that he would uphold the numerous religions, cultures, traditions and beliefs to which our hearts and minds direct us. It had previously been reported that the King was considering altering the oath to make himself defender of faith, or defender of the faiths, in recognition of his personal commitment to Christianity, Judaism, Islam, Buddhism, Sikhism and other religions. However, such a move would require a change in the law, for which there is not enough time ahead of the May the 6th coronation. It is likely to be amended ahead of the coronation of the Prince of Wales. The Constitution Unit at University College London recommended in October that the King swear to defend all religious faiths, suggesting that such a change to the coronation oath would better reflect modern multicultural Britain. In their report, Swearing in the New King, the Accession and Coronation Oaths, academics Professor Robert Hazel and Dr. Bob Morris said the oath taken by Queen Elizabeth II at her coronation in 1953, during which she promised to be defender of the faith, upholding the rights of the Church of England, no longer suits a country in which a wider variety of religions are practiced. The unit suggested a number of alternative oaths that could be introduced, ranging from a modest alteration to a more radical rewriting. It said that not only should the current oath be updated in time for the Prince of Wales's accession to the throne, but that the government should make clear ahead of King Charles' coronation that the oath would be amended. The unit recommended that a statement of intent reflecting the King's position be included in the coronation's souvenir programme. The King has always intended to ensure that all faiths are recognised during his coronation, although suggestions that it will be a multi-faith ceremony have been played down in recent years. In 1994, he outlined his views on the relationship between the monarch, who is supreme governor of the Church of England, and other religious faiths, saying, "I personally would rather see it as defender of faith, not the faith, because it means just one particular interpretation of the faith, which I think is sometimes something that causes a deal of a problem. It has done for hundreds of years. People have fought each other to the death over these things, which seems to me a peculiar waste of people's energy when we're all actually aiming for the same ultimate goal." A Buckingham Palace spokesman declined to comment beyond stating that all details of the coronation will be shared in due course. Lambeth Palace also declined to comment. A popular Amsterdam crockery company has been forced to withdraw a coffee bowl depicting a grinning, rosy-cheeked Anne Frank clutching a diary along with other symbols of Dutch glory such as clogs, tulips and windmills. The quiche mug showed the Holocaust victims looking cheery while surrounded by Dutch archetypes including Sinterklaas, Santa Claus, ice skates and the nation's sickly desserts, Vlaflip, a syrupy custard, and Hagelslag, chocolate sprinkles. After widespread outrage over the bowl entitled Holland's Glory, which had been stocked in the country's biggest supermarket chain, Albert Heijn, and tourist shops in the capital, the manufacturer, Blonde Amsterdam, pulled it from sale. "We were dumbfounded," said Aaron Vrela of Israel's Information and Documentation Center, the CIDI. "A cheerful picture of Anne Frank on a coffee bowl with the theme Dutch glory is very inappropriate indeed. Not the context in which she should be remembered, and unfortunately, her fate was not exactly an example of Dutch glory. While Anne Frank's diary is a global bestseller and her hiding place in Amsterdam now a major tourist attraction, probably accounting for her inclusion on the bowl, her fate in a Nazi death camp symbolizes one of the darkest chapters in Dutch history. The Jewish Frank family fled Nazi Germany to Amsterdam and were denied Dutch citizenship. In August 1944, after 4 years of Nazi occupation, Anne and her family, who lived in hiding after 1942, during which she wrote a diary, were arrested after being betrayed by a Dutch neighbor. She and her family were arrested after a raid by two Dutch policemen, Gesenus Gringhus and Willem Gutendorst, who were collaborating with the Nazis under the command of Karl Sieberbauer, a Gestapo and SS officer. The Frank family were sent via the National Dutch Railways to a transit camp at Westerbork in the Netherlands, from where 102,000 Jews were shipped to their deaths in other Nazi death camps. She was sent to Auschwitz, where her mother later died, and then the Bergen-Belsen concentration camp, where she died of typhus in February 1945, shortly after the death of Margot, her older sister. In 2019, the Dutch state-owned rail company Netherlands Spoorwegen paid compensation worth over 40 million euros to Holocaust survivors after resisting reparation deeds for decades. 2 years ago, the Dutch Protestant Church confessed guilt in preparing the breeding ground in which the seeds of anti-Semitism could grow ahead of the Second World War and the Holocaust. 3/4 of Dutch Jews were murdered during the Second World War with the assistance of local Nazi sympathizers and many collaborators in the civil service, such as Gringhaus and Grotendorst. Most went unpunished after the war. The Jewish population was 154,887 in 1941 and just 14,346 in the 1947 census. The crockery company expressed dismay over the reaction to the bowl, which it said had been misunderstood, and promised to donate cash from sales before it was withdrawn. "The series in which the bowl appeared should be a positive reminder of Dutch scenes and heroes that we are proud of. Unfortunately, this feeling does not come across to everyone in the way we had envisioned," said a statement. And finally, Pastor Jamie was in America recently and really got into the culture. When he was in a shop and the guy said, "Have a nice day," and Pastor Jamie didn't, so he sued him.
My name is Paul Hill. Thank you for listening to Lutheran Radio UK. Lutheran Radio News will be back next Friday. Until then, every blessing to you and goodbye for now.